You may have seen a recent insurance advertisement in which a family is battling what they call an invasive weed problem. This fast-growing giant plant disturbs their dinner, rest, and play. But the weed we are told about in Matthew 13 looks nothing like the televised invader.
Raising Joyful Children in an Angry World, a podcast dedicated to faithful parents navigating their families through a stormy culture.
Welcome to Raising Joyful Children in an Angry World. I'm your host, Paul Osborne. And today, I want to talk about the weed in the kingdom of heaven and how to prevent it from stealing your joy. In Matthew 13, verse 24, Jesus told another parable. He said, "The kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while everyone was sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. And when the wheat sprouted and formed heads, and the weeds also appeared. The owner's servants came to him and said, 'Sir, didn't you sow good seed in your field? Where then did the weeds come from?' 'An enemy did this,' he replied." The servants asked, "Do you want us to go and pull them up?" "No," he answered, "because while you are pulling up the weeds, you may uproot the wheat with them. Let them both grow together until the harvest. At that time, I will tell the harvesters, 'First collect the weeds and tie them in bundles to be burned. Then gather the wheat and bring it into my barn.'" The word for weed in the Greek is zizania, and it is sometimes translated as darnel. A toxic plant that looks just like wheat, so hard to tell apart that you can't tell until the crop matures, because the wheat will droop and the darnel will stand straight up. Wheat, of course, is a grain used to feed humanity, and darnel is toxic to our humanity and can only be fed to the cattle. The deceptive weed in the kingdom of heaven must be understood so that it does not rob us of our joy or cloud our understanding of God. There are several things we need to point out. The obvious is the enemy of God plants at night. He's deceptive. Well, the interesting thing is that the workers go to the owner looking for the cause, asking, "What kind of seed did you plant?" And the weed, it's not really recognizable until the plant shoots up a bit. The instruction is not to pull the tares or the darnel in the story, for it will damage the wheat. The plan of God, understanding his promises and how to handle the enemy when he plants these tares in our kingdoms, is essential in keeping the joy of our families alive. Now, Luther taught on this parable that the devil only sows evil seeds, and yet the heretics it raises are not to be dealt with by sword or burning at the stake. But we must let God handle it and understand that God uses this as part of his plan. But how do we do this? The culture we swim in leaves us vulnerable to misunderstanding the wisdom of this parable. We have to first recognize we really have an enemy. Our enemy sows evil. The culture we're in denies biblical evil. It ignores the existence of the devil. And the world's denial, when combined with this elevated view of humanity, tends to blind us or throw us even into deeper sleep as the enemy does his work. The servants in this story, they ask the owner of the field, "Didn't you sow good seed? How did this happen?" But notice the question. It's almost like saying, "Well, what kind of seed did you buy?" The need to blame. We're wired to hunt for the cause when something bad happens. Our minds are fueled to find the blame. The cancel culture. This is this kind of thinking at full speed. Interesting, the legendary football coach Vince Lombardi once said, "We chase perfection, knowing we will never catch it." But the culture of today chases imperfection, certain it will capture it. Investigative reporting, the docudramas on your streaming service, The constant condemnation talk in politics, sports, finance. Some of it sounds so righteous, but it can be a toxic spirit of condemnation that starts to leak into our hearts. Sports talk, turn it on. You're going to hear about which coach is on the hot seat. Or the Speaker of the House of our country recently voted out in one of the shortest terms in history. Prime ministers in the UK seem to be getting the boot in record time. This find the flaw, blow it up, then demand change, removal, firings, boycotts. It doesn't teach us to ask God what actually happened and what God would have us do. The culture prefers the poison of hang 'em now, try 'em later. And it's something that doesn't belong on our table. Sadly, this psychology that comes into our life and even into our church that promotes this praise of self-awareness, situational awareness, emotional intelligence, this drives us to finding imperfections and lets us become anxious to go tell people how awful things are. And it fools us into thinking, well, we can fix it. So we rush into the field with our tool belt on instead of seeking God, and our joy starts to leak out. It can even lead us to become, well, that hypocritical prayer, I thank God I'm not like other men. The enemy came at night. The seeds he planted were undetectable. So before we rush into the argument of the day, before we're upset about America's latest vice and the opinions that surround it, we have to recognize these are spiritual problems. We end up giving too much honor to the outrage merchant, too little time seeking what our God would have us know and do. And consumeristic Christianity has offered little understanding in the issue of evil. The hard thing, the really hard thing in this parable is Jesus explaining that there's evil in the world and how God handles it. Matthew Henry talked about the evil in the world and God allowing the evil from the apostates to come into the world and yet use it to advance his gospel and his purposes, and in order to strengthen our trust in his promise. That's one tough thing for those of us that have a Star Wars understanding of good and evil, like two opposing forces of power. God has no rival. No evil substance thwarts his will. This is so hard in a Christianity that rejects what the Bible has to say about our human will and God's sovereign, all-powerful will. God is not contained in cause and effect, like we are in humanity. And it's hard to see in our world of assessing blame, our psychological need to determine the cause of the harm. God is not the cause of evil, for there is no darkness in him at all. God does use evil for the advancement of good and of his purposes. We can go so far as to say that he allows evil to advance in order to strengthen our trust and build up his kingdom and his people. The stories of Joseph and his brothers. It's evil. God uses their evil deeds to feed the nation when famine comes. Moses and Pharaoh. God has hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he allows this continual evil of the Egyptians to advance in order to drive the Hebrew nation to the Red Sea, in which God destroys the armies of Egypt. The gospel itself is the betrayal, the evil betrayal of Judas, the evil of the Pharisees and of the Roman government that advance so far as to crucify Jesus so that our sins are forgiven. God did not plant the tares. God uses the tares, however, to advance his kingdom and to protect the wheat, that's us, for his glory when the final judgment comes. The crazy evil heretics are not going to destroy his church. Evil is not the equal opposite of God, and yet God at times seems to hide under the evil so that you and I learn to trust God with stronger and more powerful trust. In the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, King Nebuchadnezzar brings the full force of the government and the culture and of his punishment, forcing people into a heretical, blasphemous worship of an idol. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego ignore it. They don't participate in the idolatry. And when they're called on the carpet, they don't give honor to arguing with the king. They honor their king. And God uses the evil to turn the furnace on the soldiers who follow the evil orders. They're the ones that get burned and die. Then God rescues the three from the furnace and advances the gospel. The story validates why we don't pull up the tares, and it shows us why we don't use force in the issues of faith. Psalm 1 tells us that sinners will not stand in the congregation of the righteous. Now, this does not mean that we should not oppose evil. It does not mean that we have to eliminate just wars or that justice and self-defense is not appropriate. We should stand against it, but there is a constraint on the forms of justice, and our opposition cannot supersede our trust that God will rescue us. The cultural heresies that upset us actually provide us opportunities to teach our children about truth, about our faith, and how we handle evil, how we let the Lord take vengeance, prayerfulness, and in all of it, we must press into our trust of God's promises. This is a resistant band-like exercise for our faith, not a joy-robbing dilemma to fear. The evil twin of darnel planted by the enemy is used to build the spiritual muscle, not to sharpen the sword. If I had to do anything over, one thing would be to pay less attention to the latest culture war, and I would host an annual awards banquet for my family. I would take a day to notice the ways each of us had the right attitude and effort in use of our spiritual gifts and honor some of the best efforts that were made. The Christian school my children attended is celebrating its 40th year, and they consistently acknowledged spiritual gifts among the classes, at the sports banquet, and in every aspect of education. To accomplish this, you have to spend more time looking at the spiritual fruit that God produces in your kids, less time letting the heretics of our society stroke our anger. The Church of England in its glory days taught that heretics are necessary. From the Bible passage, "For it is necessary that there are factions among you." 1 Corinthians 11, verse 19. In fact, Martin Luther uses this verse to help explain the parable of the wheats and the tares. Discovering freedom and talents and gifts bring joy in our belonging to the kingdom of heaven. It cannot be easily lost by not understanding Satan's attempts to plant heretical teaching in the kingdom of heaven. We have to invite God to deepen our understanding. The actions of the devil's apostate followers will be used by our God to advance his kingdom. It is sounded in the Westminster Confession that we might glorify God and enjoy him forever. Protecting our joy requires a deepening of our faith, seeking to better understand how God works in the midst of our evil days. And when our children come home with the latest controversy, we must use it to explain truth. We pray that God enlightens the heretic's heart, and we seek direction from God as to how to handle the darnel weed that the enemy has planted, and trust that God ultimately will take care of it. The ultimate battle for the heart and soul is a fight for identity. Our King invites our kids to know who they are, what to believe, and where they belong. Until next time, let's remember the words, "For theirs is the kingdom of heaven."